Welcome to the Cap Tech Podcast with President Sims. I'm President Sims. I'm president of Capital Technology University. We're a small, private, nonprofit university located in Laurel, Maryland. We offer degrees at the bachelor's, master's, and doctoral level. We offer degrees in STEM or management of STEM. And we are here, And we have been in business since 1927. So today on the program, I have the Senior Vice President for Enrollment and Marketing from Capital Technology University, Diane O'Neill. Welcome, Diane.
Hi, Brad. Thanks for having me join you today.
So today we're going to do a little bit something different. We're going to turn the podcast back on me. Diane's going to ask me questions about how I moved into higher education. So I'll turn the program over to Diane.
Well, Dr. Sims, it's a pleasure to join you today for the podcast. And I believe, you know, you and I both are first generation college students. What led you to decide to obtain a degree?
So my mother and father really encouraged me to go on for a degree at a college or university. And so I didn't really think I had a choice. And so when I was in high school and started looking around where my friends were going in high school, they all kind of divided up between the three major universities in the state of Indiana. And Purdue University had engineering. I didn't know what I wanted to do in engineering, but they had more choices of degrees in engineering than the other schools in the state of Indiana. And so I applied to three universities. Purdue was one of them. And then two other smaller private nonprofits that had small engineering programs. And I was accepted to all three. But again, since I didn't know what I wanted to do, I said, I might as well go to Purdue because it had more choices and I could, you know, maybe find my way in engineering at that time of something that I really enjoyed doing. I did well in math and science in high school, so I thought it was kind of a natural choice. So I went to Purdue University and I started off year one in general engineering. That's the way it worked at Purdue when I went there. And after a semester of lots of math and science classes and very little specific classes in any engineering field, I took all the tests from career services of what area I might want to go into. And pretty much the test all came back and said management. And so in engineering, there was engineering management, but I didn't really understand and see myself, what was I going to do with my future? So I started asking around about questions from other students, trying to figure out what areas of management were something that maybe I really wanted to do. And there was a student on my floor in the dorm room that we had at Purdue, and he had looked at construction management. And he gave me all the paperwork on it, and I looked it over, and I went and visited the construction management program and got a tour of the facilities and talked to the advisor in construction management and saw that it was pretty interesting. So I changed my major from general engineering, which you really couldn't choose a major that first year in engineering, to the degree of construction management. And I moved into that major the following year. And I really enjoyed the courses that I took in construction management. They were a mix of business. They had engineering. They had technology. They had architecture. It was just a wide variety of courses and practical applied problem solving skill sets that you could really see yourself doing, like estimating with real blueprints and all that stuff. And so it was very, very interesting program. It was, of course, driven by project management. Construction management is really a project management program with construction courses added to it. And I went through that program. I was successful and had several job offers. And so I took a job offer outside the state of Indiana when I graduated, and I was very happy with what I did with both the degree program and my first job that I chose.
So you finished at Purdue and you went right into industry.
Yes, we graduated, I believe, back in the day. I think I graduated about the first Saturday of May, and I really wanted to actually take 3 months off, but the company wanted me to start in 30 days. So I said, okay, you know, I didn't think I had a choice, right? So I started basically June 1st in the new position.
Yeah. So there's job opportunities in construction management. So what led you to move from industry to higher education?
Well, whenever I took that job, the first job in construction management, I certainly thought my career was going to be focused in the construction industry for the rest of my life. And so that first job was at a DOE facility, Savannah River site. And so we built, basically they built nuclear reactors and environmental systems and stuff like that. Big facilities was pretty much the construction. I was in the waste and environmental projects division where we ended up doing cost and scheduling for facilities that were going to be eventually built at the Savannah River site. And I did that for a couple of years. And I thought, you know, I really want to be more focused on leading the project management aspect instead of just doing kind of the cost and scheduling, which was important, but I wanted to branch out. And one thing that I also did while I was doing that, I was also the computer administrator for my group because I had known a little bit more about computers than the rest of the folks in my group. And we had, at that time, we had some of the advanced computer systems that were better than the general public had, you know, a little bit. And, you know, I love computers and the technology associated with that. So not only was I proficient with all the industry software. I understood the computers, I understood the construction, but I thought there's got to be a next step up for me. And I wanted to be in a larger kind of view of project management. Mm-hmm. And so I looked around and I found a job in Boston for what was called back then as Badger Engineers. I think they got bought up by Raytheon Engineers. And it was a global company and they did industrial facility construction globally. Their office there in Boston, it was right across the street from MIT. And your work, they had everything in that. It was a high-rise building. So not only did they do the engineering and the design, they did the construction, they did the cost and scheduling, they did the project management. They even had a division back then before what's called BIM took over, building information modeling. They had model builders who would build the entire projects at like 1/50th scale with models. And it was a whole floor of people building models back in the 90s to show what the plans looked like. So it was pretty interesting. And I was there and the market started going down. So we started having a recession at that time. And so projects weren't getting built and then some people were getting laid off. So I thought, you know, I might as well look around and see if there's another organization, construction company I could move to since I didn't want to get caught and if there was a reduction. And I found a company based out of Minneapolis. It's called Cherney Contracting and they did industrial facilities. They did power plants, they did refineries. And they just started a project in Southern California at the Arco Refinery. So they hired me. And I went out to, well, I went, spent a month in Minneapolis and I went to the Mall of America every weekend. And then after that, I got moved out to Southern California and I was a startup office in Southern California, in Carson, California, is where we started our office complex. So I was one of the first two people out there for that satellite office. And so as we were ramping up to build new components, new parts to the refinery, because the Arco refinery, there was law changes that, you know, the air had to be clean. So there was lots of vessels and new processes that they had to put in place. And it was 3 to 4 year long project. That's how much work was at the refinery just to meet the California upgraded codes. So I went out there and thoroughly enjoyed project management of that, being involved in on the site with 500 tradespeople. We were the union contractor. And so we managed 500 tradespeople on the site. And then we worked across the parking lot from the non-union contractor, which had another 500 people. So it was a very, very large, you know, structure of workers out there building all these for the Arco refinery. And so while that was going on, I was thinking about my career as well, because the company let me know that most likely at the end of that project, I'd probably go do the same thing on another refinery. They might move. They were looking at moving me up to San Francisco to do another refinery. But I thought, you know, I really want to be involved in operations, because in the end, I was kind of getting the taste that if I could make my plan to move into a position over the next several years where I could do something like be vice president of operations, that was exciting to me. And, you know, to oversee projects from the central office and manage the operations from that, that's the strategy behind that, the logistics, I enjoyed that aspect. And so I talked to the employer and they're like, well, we really need you to do the same thing in the next job, and then we can talk after that. And so that made me think, how can I move towards the VP of operations in a different fashion? And so at that time I thought, well, maybe if I get a master's degree, I can take that, my work experience and a master's degree, and turn that into another employer's desire to hire me in the operations area. So I asked my professors back at Purdue, you know, where should I go for a master's degree? And they said, well, you need to go to University of Florida. They have the best, oldest master's degree in construction management in the nation. And so I applied there and I was accepted, and they gave me a graduate teaching position to teach surveying, which reduced my tuition greatly. And so I accepted that. And within a year, my wife and I, we moved from California to Florida, the University of Florida, where I started on that master's degree full time. And I didn't know exactly how long it was going to take, but when I started the program, one of the other students showed me, because my bachelor's was in construction management, if I followed a certain sequence of classes, I could be done in 12 months. And so I thought, well, that's a pretty good deal. And then I had a professor there who said, if you take the master's of science option, which you write a thesis, then you can get practice if you ever want to go on for a doctorate. Yeah, otherwise, you can take the master's degree and be out with a project. And so I thought about it. And I thought, well, might as well do the thesis just to get the practice. And so I was there for the fall and spring, and I started writing my thesis during summer. And in the spring, the professors at Purdue called me and said, you know, if you want to come up here next after you get your master's, we'll bring you in basically as a visiting assistant professor, and you can become a graduate instructor. And then if you want to get your doctorate, you can get tuition waiver. We'll allow you to get your doctorate, and, you know, we'll pay you a salary as a graduate instructor along the way. Or if you just want to teach and get some experience, you could go back to industry. And so at that time, I hadn't really ever thought about being in higher education. I just wanted to go back to industry and be a vice president of operations. But I thought, you know, if I get the doctorate for free, maybe there's some value of that in the future. And my wife and I didn't have children at the time. And so we decided to do that. So I went to Purdue and worked on the doctorate while I was teaching, because I thought that was the best, you know, kind of thing to do, get it knocked out of the way, since it was a good deal. And within three years, I had everything with the doctorate and had the teaching experience. So I started applying back to industry because I wanted to be in operations in the construction industry. And I found it very difficult talking to recruiters who are coming to campus. The recruiters who are coming to interview the undergraduate students basically didn't know what to do with me. They thought it was strange I had a doctorate and I wanted to go back to industry. And I would explain to them that, you know, the doctorate didn't have any special thing about it that, you know, I couldn't do something in industry. But I think, you know, the reality was I was not speaking to the right level of person, because they were recruiting for, you know, entry level, and I was looking for a senior management position. And so at the same time, because I had industry experience and a PhD, across the nation, all the universities with construction management degrees wanted to hire me, because I had the two things they wanted most, experience and a PhD. So I started interviewing at higher education universities. And I got a few interviews with companies as well, especially in the computer area, because I knew about computers. And so University of Florida, they wanted me to come back and start as assistant professor. And that was at the top of my list of places to go start my academic career if I wanted to. And I did have an offer from a software company. It was a construction project management company called Prolog Manager, that I could go work for them and be a sales and implementation person. I have a region, and then I would go try to sell the product. And if it got bought, then I had to go and implement it for the company. So they said that in that case, I'd probably be on the road about 4 days a week. And I didn't think that that's where I really wanted to do, just be on the road all the time. And I also, when you're a graduate student, it's not the same experience as being a tenure track professor. It's a different experience. So, you know, I decided to go ahead and try it out and be assistant professor at the University of Florida and see what that was like. Because I thought, you know, I could always leave that and go back to industry. So I went back to Florida and started out and teaching classes. And then you have to write journal articles, referee journal articles. I was doing that. And then you had to write proposals for grants. I was doing that. I was doing everything that I needed to do. And it was a big research university. So that's what University of Florida is. And I decided that I really like the aspect of if I'm going to stay in higher education, teaching, because I was there to try to help students get a good career. And so Florida, being a research university, really liked the research area. And so I didn't see it as a perfect match for me. So I started looking around to what else I could, you know, maybe do to get kind of in the area that I thought I needed to be into. And so the University of Florida, we had a membership with an international agency in Europe, and they gave me a year off, and I went over there and became basically the assistant director of that international organization. And I enjoyed that. My wife's job transferred to Europe, so that was good for her. And before I had left the States, I had wrote a proposal for Western Carolina University to start their bachelor's program in construction management. And so while I was over in Europe, it got approved, and they called me and said, you know, we'd really like you to come back and start it. We went back to North Carolina, and I started the program at Western Carolina University in construction management. And it was exciting because it was just me starting the program. So it was like a startup. And what I found out, Western Carolina University is a comprehensive university. So it's more about teaching and helping students be successful and get a good career. And I really liked that kind of atmosphere. And the program took off. So it started growing quickly. So the bachelor's program grew from 0 to 400 students in 5 years. And then at the same time, I started one of the first online master's degrees in construction management, because I wanted to learn how to teach online. And we had the predecessor to Blackboard. And so I started it, and it was called WebCT. I started it, the program, in that because I knew working adults really wanted to teach, take something at a distance. And so I learned a lot starting that program online, and it grew up to 50 students pretty quickly. So within 5 years, I basically had the third largest program on campus between the bachelor's and master's students. And I learned a lot about online learning, as well as the building the lab space out for the undergraduates. And I held the biggest career fairs on campus twice a year at Western Carolina, bringing in the construction company. So it was a very successful time. I even learned how to do fundraising, and I was able to get a contract signed that equaled a $10 million donation from a construction recruiting company over 8 years. That's what it was about to equal to. So it was a great learning experience. And I went from being an associate professor, I got my tenure, I was a full professor. So I learned about the academic aspects quite a bit, dealing with all of that. And then I became my own department chair, because once I hit about 400 students, they said, well, you know, basically you get your own department because, you know, you're big. And so I was a department chair managing all that. And then after 7 years at Western Carolina University, I thought, well, if I want to stay in higher education, how do I replicate being a vice president of operations? Because that's still really what I wanted to do. And in higher education, you got to follow a chain where you kind of move up from department chair to dean of a college to vice president of academic affairs to then the chancellor or president of a university. And I really like the technical areas, that we have here at Capital Tech or what I was involved with. And so I started looking around and I found a job as Dean of the College of Technology at Indiana State. And I moved up there and learned a lot about recruiting up there. We were able to turn our recruitment around and increase enrollment greatly in 4 years and expand programs in the built environment. And then a job came open at Embry-Riddle Aeronautical University's Worldwide Division, which was a great user of Blackboard for distance delivery globally. They have 130 locations, mostly military folks, but distance-wise, they had their own staff that designed online courses and an adjunct, 2,500 adjunct that taught these online courses. So they had a need for basically a chief academic officer or vice president of academic affairs. So I took that job and really saw how all that worked and was part of the changeover when we changed software from Blackboard to Canvas and we changed websites and all the, and you know, how do we built dashboards for tracking daily activities. It was really exciting. I really enjoyed it. And so then after doing that for about another 4 years, the job at Capital Tech came open for the president. And of course it's in the STEM area or management STEM, which is something that I really enjoy. And so I came up to Capital Tech and I'm still involved in higher education, but connected to industry. And so I don't, I miss industry some days, but I like what higher education can do to provide for students in their careers.
So yeah, it's interesting in hearing about your progression and starting in industry, you know, starting in the undergraduate degree in engineering and this path that includes technology and management and project management and this love of computers and this commitment to higher education as a path to a good career for the future, whether it's your path or as you did it in North Carolina and your other universities. So, you know, you've worked at a couple of different places. What does Capital do really well for its students?
I think Capital Tech, the thing that we do really well is we provide applied education that is directly connected to industry. So if you're a traditional 18-year-old student, you know you've got a job waiting for you with your bachelor's degree. And we certainly push internships. We want you to have one as well. But we hire adjuncts and the full-time faculty we have on staff all came out of industry. And so we want industry people teaching our students these technical classes. We have humanities as well, but we also want our students to write well. We want them to be able to present well. We want them to have good oral communications, besides understanding that we want them to be ready to go to work with industry. And that's what industry likes about us. We have, you know, of course, high placement at all levels. We offer, I think, great career advancement for the master's and doctoral students. They're all pretty much working full time and they take our master's or doctoral degrees because they want to advance their skill sets. We even have some of our doctoral students doing their second doctoral degree because they like it so much. But at the undergraduate level, you know, one of the things that we offer at Capital to show our commitment that we do well by providing you this education where you can have a career is for the bachelor's degree programs as a whole, whether they're online or on campus, we have a commitment that if you don't have a job in 90 days that pays in your market range, we're going to give you a certificate in another area for free. And we just don't have many people using that. Or if you're an on-campus student at the bachelor's level, who's starting out or transfers in with 2 years left, we now offer a guaranteed $50,000 starting salary. And if you don't get that, we have a repayment for your student loan or your parent's student loan every quarter. That payment will be repaid until you exceed $50,000 starting salary. Because we know with our degree programs, you're not going to make less than $50,000. It's just incredible demand in the STEM or management STEM areas. And industry can't fill these jobs, even with the recession in 2008, now the pandemic, when we lost employment, STEM jobs or management STEM jobs are just high demand areas that are going to be continually in need. And Capital Tech does that well. And we rely on industry people teaching our classes because we want that experience infused into the classroom. So I really think that's our strength at Capital Tech. And we are career focused. We're a small university. And so we don't have a big division of research like at the big universities. Like down the road, we have University of Maryland. And every state needs those big research universities. But for us, you know, we want to focus on building careers. And we keep that commitment based on our founder from 1927, Navy vet, who started teaching other vets how to build radios. And so we have that same philosophy, and that's what we really do well, is teach somebody to be a success in industry or to advance in industry, or even the military people we have transitioning out of the military. We help them out, and that's what we want to do, is help them have a great career, take care of their family for the rest of the time that they have that job.
That's great. You know, during your time here, Dr. Sims, you've had the university launch a new website. You focused on the website and marketing. You focused on moving undergraduate programs into online programs. You've greatly expanded our portfolio of academic programs and whatnot, but consistently staying focused on the mission, which is to provide that practical education in careers. What do you see for the future of higher education?
I think higher education landscape is going to change dramatically in the future. I mean, we already know from the studies before the pandemic that the amount of students graduating from high school nationally is declining. And with the pandemic, we also know that the amount is going to decline some more, because the studies already show that the pool of 18-year-olds is just shrinking. So universities, number one, that just depend completely on undergraduate students, they're going to have to look at how they're going to need to change to make up for that loss of enrollment from the undergraduates. And universities also that are highly reliant upon facilities, if they have a lot of facilities, they cost a lot of money. And so there's a base amount of money that you have to put in if you have lots of facilities. So I think, you know, part of the future is going to show that you have to change your business model if you're a private nonprofit to make up for that difference. You know, states do have a different model, the state universities. Some of them get funded well from the state and some of them don't. A lot of that changed in 2008 with the recession, where states cut back on funding state universities, but some states do still fund that portion. But the private nonprofits have to look at where are they bringing in the revenue to continue their mission of providing this education. It's going to change partly on that. We also know technology is changing all the time. So I think there's a day that's going to come that all high school graduates will just automatically have to know how to program. It just won't be an optional class anymore. They're just going to come to college knowing how to program, because that's just going to be the requirement. And then industry, you know, where is it going to go forth? Well, it's becoming more and more automated. And that's partly because of the shortage of workers. So no matter which industry segment you talk to, construction segment, the IT sector, you know, any of these industries that rely on large amounts of people doing their daily job, it's shrinking to the point where they have to automate. So not only are the you know, trades area have to know more about technology, because you can't just not know about understanding the computer portion of it, because that's the way automation is going. So you have to have a trades group that understands how to do the hands-on trade skill set, but also are technically competent. You have to have managers that are graduating with, you know, degrees that also are technically competent and understand software systems. And on top of software systems, they have to know what's being a danger to your company. So now, do you understand a little bit about cybersecurity, ransomware, you know, the secure the network? If you're on a construction site, you got multiple satellite offices. You have to understand that. And there, of course, the technology will just continue to grow to make up for the shortage of workers at both the management and the craft level, because that's just the way it is. And construction's not stopping, or building's not stopping, or software development's not stopping. All these businesses still have to continue to produce products because that drives the economy. So the way to make up for the shortage of the labor force is to automate. So that brings in a lot more technology. So the whole dynamic of what you're going to need to learn in the future, I think, is going to change in the next 20 years to where it's not going to look at all like we see it today. I think it's just a matter of time.
I agree. It's a very dynamic landscape, and capital is poised to pivot as the changes in technology warrant. Well, great.
Well, I hope you enjoyed today's show. We did a little switch up on this, so you'd get to hear from my perspective on how I got into higher education from industry. It's been a great challenge and a great change. And I really enjoy giving back to our students, whether they're traditional age, career changers, transitioning military, or advancing your careers. Your impact to provide somebody this great career opportunity and do something they really love, being in higher education, has been, you know, a windfall of that type of effort. Now, students may never know you're part of it because they don't see what aspect unless you're in the classroom teaching them directly. But from my point of view, being part of it in any position I held at the university has certainly been something I've enjoyed my entire life, and I've continued to do it for many years to come, because I don't see any time that I'm going to get out of higher education. But I want to be part of the future and how we adapt to the future needs for both our students and for the industry that we serve. So thank you for attending today's CapTech podcast.